right center field. Long run, Engel at the wall. Gone! MJ Melendez. It's his first big league home run.
It's amazing what happens when you put MJ Melendez in the lineup every day. I mean, well, at least for one day. Actually, two games. I mean, he must be worn out. They definitely need to sit him today. I mean, the guy's getting old. What is he, 21, 22? Yeah, no sarcasm there. Royals split a doubleheader yesterday. You just heard the home run by Melendez. He had to play both games behind the plate because Salvi sprained his thumb. Salvi now going on the injured list. And I'm sure Royals fans are thinking, well, now we're really toast. I will argue that the Royals might be better off. I'm not saying that Salvi is a bad player. I'm just saying that there's now going to be MJ Melendez is now we're going to get to see him play all the time. That might be a blessing. It might be a blessing. The Royals split doubleheader with the White Sox yesterday. They lost the afternoon game 3-0. They won the nightcap 2-1 behind an outstanding start from Brady Singer. In his first start of the year, he pitched a gem. 7 scoreless innings, allowing no runs on just 4 hits with 9 strikeouts. And you know what the key pitch was? Oh, yeah, the third pitch that he's not developed since he was 14 that the Royals knew about when they drafted him and still draft him anyway, who did not keep him in AAA during the 60-game COVID season to where he could have developed that. But then finally came to their senses, sent him from the bullpen to start this year to AAA to work more on it. And by golly, it was pretty effective. Melendez is a story as well. As I said, he had his first career homer, as you heard, and the Royals were up 2-0 in that second game last night. The Royals scored just 2 runs in the 2 games yesterday, 18 innings. So firing that hitting coach has really paid off. However, in fairness, when you take a change, you're not going to see the benefits of a change immediately, usually. So the good news is they won the second game. The bad news is the first game was a train wreck. And you may say, well, how is it a train wreck when it was only 3-0? The White Sox scored all 3 of their runs in the 5th inning. The Royals wasted multiple opportunities. I've retweeted it. Follow me, NCKS Radio Guy. NCKS Radio Guy 10 is my Twitter handle. The Royals this year have made some of the dumbest decisions that I've ever seen a Major League Baseball team do in sending a runner home when they shouldn't be. And if you go and watch yesterday's game where Hunter Dozier was sent home on a base hit to left center field, if you know anything about baseball, you have to absolutely be close to puking in the trash can to your right about how bad that was. That was embarrassing. That was horrendous. And if you believe the Royals are maybe trying to tank, you had to wonder. Because he got thrown out probably about as far as Gordon would have been thrown out if he had gone in Game 7 of the 14 World Series. It was not even close. The White Sox looked absolutely stunned and shocked that Hunter Dozier went home. And here's the great, stupid thing about it. That's right, great, stupid thing about it. It was a final out. You never make the final out with a base running blunder like that. No, that is a cardinal sin in baseball. It's a sin. It's a sin in baseball at about any level, but it is an absolute sin at the big league level.
You say the White Sox were shocked. I thought Hunter Dozier was shocked as
he was shocked he was sent.
Yeah, a step or two before third. I think he was ready to stop.
He was trying to shut it down, actually. Yeah. So that was a horrible decision by third base coach. Bring Mike Gersley back because he did way better sending guys. We know that. Mm-hmm. And then we haven't even got to the fun part. It gets better? Yes, it does. The Royals wasted multiple opportunities. Listen to this. In the 7th inning, with the bases loaded and no one out, Carlos Santana and Ryan O'Hearn, shockingly, both struck out swinging. Then Hunter Dozier popped out to end the threat and swung at 2 pitches that were nowhere close to the zone. If he just takes a walk, they drive in a run. This is what Dayton Moore was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, the Royals hitters went 0-for-11 in Game 1 with runners in scoring position. The number 3 and 4 hitters, that is O'Hearn and Santana. Santana and O'Hearn. And actually, by the way, Salvi, you got to throw these guys in there, okay? The 3 and 4 hitters struck out 6 times with runners in scoring position with 1 out or less. They didn't move the runner. They didn't put the ball in play. As Dusty said yesterday, it's when you have your strikeouts. There's a great example. Royals are now 13-22. The White Sox are 18-18. Game 4 of 5 in this series is tonight at 7:10 at the K. Zach Greinke on the hill. And you can just expect the Royals to do nothing for him offensively tonight, as normal. I'm sorry, I'm being very negative, but, I mean, I don't see the positives other than Brady Singer and MJ Melendez. And that's two guys that are vital to the Royals' future. Absolutely vital. And if neither one of those guys pan out, this franchise is in for a world of hurt for a while. Greinke 0-2, ERA at 3.52. Starts, here's Mike Matheny on his pitcher, Brady Singer.
It was one of those when they come back, okay, I'm going to show you a little something. And that's exactly how you're supposed to handle this. And every opportunity you get out here is special. And he came back with a purpose and looked like a completely different pitcher, really, mostly with usage, right? And, you know, I think we had 17 of the changeups today, and every one of them seemed to have an effectiveness on the following pitch. And then the slider was obviously really good. It was tunneling really well with the sinker. He had the right movement, pounded the strike zone. I mean, everything we hope for every time one of our guys goes out there. And that was just a display of heart and stuff and just talent.
So, once again, Royals will play the White Sox again tonight at the K. 7:10, Zach Greinke on the hill. Royals are 13-22 on the year. Please lift me up. It's time for a Cubs update with Jason Broadfoot.
Brought to you by Al Capone.
Good man.
Second
shutout. Look that up. That's not a good comment. I just said, you're not a good man.
Second shutout in a row. 7-0 win over the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Well, that's the key. Play the Pirates a lot.
Well, you know.
You know, that's good.
If we play the Pirates and the Reds enough.
Yeah.
Heck, maybe we can get this up to 500.
He can play the Reds and not get a hit and still beat the Reds.
There we go.
I mean, it's not that hard, apparently. Well, congratulations, Cubbies. Holy cow, as Harry Carey would say. Jason's liking these updates.
I am.
Cubs shut teams out and win. It's a lot better than the Royals right now, that's for sure. Hey, here's some good news when it comes to the Diamond, baseball and softball today.
Yeah, regional baseball and softball for the Bullitt Trojans as they get things rolling again. We'll start with softball. The Bullitt, the number 2 seed at 16-3. They'll face the host school team, P. Marion La Crosse, the number 3 seed at 12-9. Do want to let everybody know that these games will not be at TMP's field anymore because of the weather that came through. They'll be at the Bickel Schmidt Complex there in Hayes. The biggest thing to know if you're a fan going is sunflower seeds are not allowed on the property. So if you want to chew sunflower seeds today, keep them in the car.
Be prepared to be arrested and go to jail.
Exactly. They're not going to take it. No sunflower seeds at Bickel Schmidt. But again, it's been moved there. It's still in Hayes. Everything's still at the same time, just at a different location here today. Beloit TMP La Crosse will be the second of two semifinals today as Hoisington Central Plains faces Russell Victoria. That's the 1-5 teams that are playing there to start the day at 3 o'clock this afternoon, followed by the Lady Trojans and Lady Monarchs. And Beloit and TMP La Crosse will play 25 minutes after the conclusion of that game between Hoisington Central Plains and Russell Victoria. The two semifinals winners will meet later this evening in Hayes for the regional championship. Also today, baseball-wise, Beloit competing in Great Bend. 3A semifinal action today. The first semifinal has top seed at Ellsworth against number 5 seed Larned at 2. Beloit is the 3 seed with a 10-7 record facing number 2 seed TMP La Crosse, which is 12-5. Beloit TMP La Crosse will start 25 minutes after the conclusion of that first game between Ellsworth and Larned. And same situation, winner of the two semifinal games will play for the championship in Great Bend this evening. So for all the regional baseball and softball brackets and area scores, you can visit ncksports.com. I had a chance to talk with both of the coaches again earlier this week. And on softball side of things, Beloit taking on again TMP Marion La Crosse today. And Tyler Odell, the head coach of Beloit, even though TMP La Crosse is 12-9, still a very good opponent for his team today.
TMP is always scary to play. I think they're somewhat similar to us. I think they're, you know, maybe a little inconsistent at times, but dangerous. You know, they could beat anybody at any time. I don't know a lot about their pitching, but I think our fielding and defense stacks up well against them. Again, I think it's going to come back to, you know, how we hit the ball and how we do on offense.
Likely TMP Marion lacrosse bullet game will start somewhere around 3:30 today there at Bickle-Schmidt Sports Complex, maybe 3:45, but again, 25 minutes following that first game between Hoisington Central Plains at Russell Victoria. Baseball side of things, probably maybe 3:45, 4 o'clock at the earliest they'll get started between Bullitt and TMP Marion lacrosse. Again, TMP Marion lacrosse coming in 12-5, Bullitt 10-7. Looks like a fairly even matchup, and Brandon Cox, coach of the Bullitt baseball team, on some of the strengths for TMP.
We've looked a little bit at TMP, and I think one of their strengths is their starting pitching. And so, you know, they got a couple kids that do a nice job of throwing strikes, and you know, they've got several wins for them throughout the course of the year. And again, they've played a pretty challenging schedule themselves. So I think, you know, pitching is going to be a pretty strong suit for them.
Again, Bullitt TMP lacrosse today, 25 minutes after that first game, which starts at 2 o'clock in Great Bend. Again, it is the Russell Regional, but games are being played semifinals and finals in Great Bend today. So make sure you're in the right spot there as well. Bickle-Schmidt Sports Complex for softball and Great Bend today, and their complex for baseball. For all the regional baseball and softball brackets, visit nckssports.com. Do remind everybody, we have regional track and field reports coming up tomorrow and Friday, so be listening for those on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com. We'll start either 1:30 or 2 tomorrow once we start getting some results in from the Washington County 1A Regional, Phillipsburg 3A Regional tomorrow as well for Beloit, and then Friday we'll have the 1A Regional at Colby, 2A Regional at Smith Center. So hoping to get a lot of area athletes to state, and we will have coverage again starting tomorrow with regional track and field and a preview on our sportscast tomorrow morning.
All right, first game of the Eastern Conference Finals in the NBA began last night in Miami, and the Butler did it.
As Butler with another steal.
Drives inside, stops, turns, layup, got it.
And to me, the pick and roll is switching P.J. Tucker on Bam with another strip.
And Butler down the end, throws it down.
Jimmy Butler with 41 points. The Heat outscored the Celtics 39-14 in the third quarter. Had a 22-2 run at one point and go on to win 118-107 to take a one-game-to-none lead in the Eastern Conference Finals. Butler was sensational, 41 points in just 19 shots, 12-19 from the floor, 17-18 at the foul line. That's called a good night. Let me give you an example of what is not a good night. When you score 41 points and take 35 shots. And I mean, I've seen this at the traveling basketball level where there is, I know of a player that scores a whole bunch of points but takes a ton of shots. And he is being like built up to be this great player. That is not being a great player. Okay? I mean, it's not. Yes, are you capable of scoring 40? That's a good thing. You're capable of it. But when you're scoring 30 points on 28 shots and you lose, that doesn't you do any good.
No.
We saw it with Kobe many times. We even saw it with Jordan early in his career. I mean, Jordan scored 63 in a playoff game and lost. So that is called a real man's game last night by Jimmy Butler.
That's efficiency.
That is efficiency. That means you're getting to the line, means you're being aggressive. 41 points. He didn't hog the ball. He was efficient when he shot it, 12-19, 17-18 from the line, made him pay when he went to the line. That is called an extremely efficient performance. It's like Ochai Agbaji in Final Four against Villanova. He had, what, 9 shots that night and ended up with 20-some points?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is super efficient. In fact, you could argue the opposite. He should have shot it even more.
Yeah.
You could even
yeah.
argue with Jimmy Butler. Maybe he should have shot it more. He didn't have to. They won comfortably.
Yeah.
The other thing to point out is the Celtics were not at full strength. Neither were the Heat either. Kyle Lowry, starting point guard, out with a hamstring. But the Celtics found out, or we found out in the public yesterday, day of the game, Al Horford out with health and safety protocols. There's still some of that stuff going on out there with COVID and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Marcus Smart was out with a foot injury. Now, Marcus Smart, to me, is Tatum's is one of the best players in the NBA. I think one of the most complete players in the NBA. Jaylen Brown's an outstanding talent and a very good player. Al Horford is a tremendous role player that does exactly what he's supposed to do, and I think he was sorely missed last night. But Marcus Smart, in a way, is the heartbeat of that team. And whether you like Marcus Smart or not, that guy does anything and everything to help your team win. He'll be a pest, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
He will take a charge. Yes, he will flop. He will dive on the ball for a loose ball, and somehow people talk about eliminating diving for a loose ball when he happens to run into Steph Curry, who's too lazy to get on the floor and get a loose ball, which was the case in that situation. Marcus Smart can now shoot the three at times, very timely. He's a good foul shooter. He can drive it. He can pass it. He is a two-way player. He was not a very good offensive player, really, in the NBA in his first part of his career. He was a solid offensive player at Oklahoma State, but in the NBA, it didn't really translate initially. He's worked really hard on his game. Marcus Smart is a huge part of this team. He did not play last night. So before people, and you know all the talking heads will do this, I will be the voice of reason. Everybody's going to jump conclusions after one game, which is a major mistake. See the Mavericks and Suns series. That's all you got to do. Happens every year. This series is just getting started. If the Celtics, their job is to win one out of two. So as long as they get game two, who cares? And if they lose the first two, not the end of the world. Okay? We've seen it, as I said, with the Mavs and the Suns. So this series is going to be more interesting when Kyle Lowry comes back, if he comes back. Al Horford comes back, if he and when he comes back. How long he'll be out, how long Marcus Smart is out. Yeah, are the Celtics in trouble if Horford and Smart are not playing the next two games? Yeah, no question. But that's a big part of the equation. So there's no need to overreact and freak out if you're a Celtic fan or a talking head screaming at the top of your heads on TV about how the Celtics got blown out and we thought they were real and now they're a fraud and you were calling them to win the whole thing and now you look like an idiot because they got beat by Miami, who you didn't ever appropriately give them the credit they deserve for being the number one overall seed in the East. You know, the Heat don't get enough respect. I'm probably guilty of it as well. Jimmy Butler, and then who do they have? I mean, he's their star. Tyler Hero, he comes off the bench. He didn't even start. He's a great, very good player. Bam Adebayo
I think Bam maybe doesn't get the credit maybe that he deserves. He's been an all-star in this league.
He's improved offensively.
Yeah, and then Duncan Robinson's...
He didn't even play right now.
He's not playing right now.
He didn't even play.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't even play.
But those
Oladipo
are the names
is on their team
know,
now.
Right?
Yeah. Oladipo, who was an all-star before, he's on the team, diving on the floor, stealing the ball from Tatum last night. They've got very good role players. They know their roles, and that makes for a very good team. They're extremely well coached. Extremely well coached by Eric Spoelstra. So the Heat are not given the credit that they deserve, and there's a reason why they were the best team all year long in the East. While everybody talked about the Bucks and the Celtics and the Sixers getting Harden and Trae Young and what's wrong with the Hawks and the Knicks and what's because they're New York, we wasted way too much time on the Knicks. There's the team that just sits there and gets the number one seed and has home court throughout the Eastern Conference playoffs, and somehow they're the underdog in this series, which I know. I picked the Celtics to win in six because I agree with Jason and Dusty that the Celtics have more firepower all the way across the board. But they didn't last night.
No. And that changes a little bit when you lose a defensive prowess like Marcus Smart, right? Like a guy that can do all those things that you talked about.
But the Heat can come back and say, we are missing our starting point guard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it is interesting how, you know, in fairness, I want to present both sides there. I mean, it's very easy for Celtics saying, well, we're missing two guys. Well, I mean, the Heat can say, we're missing our point guard. That's a pretty important part of a basketball team.
Yeah.
And still, what beat you anyway? You know? So the Heat did what they're supposed to do. They're the better team all year, record-wise. Mm-hmm. They were at home, and they won. The Heat haven't accomplished anything yet in this series.
No.
They just held serve so far. Yeah. But the Celtics, they're perfectly fine. But without those two guys, yeah, it's going to be a tough series for the Celtics.
As a fan, or especially a Celtics fan, you just hope that foot injury doesn't linger. You hope this
foot injuries are scary.
This time off, hope it heals it for him. And because no coincidence that Jimmy Butler had a great game with no Marcus Smart, because Marcus Smart is a very, very good defender, and he makes you work. You can score on him, but he's going to make you work for everything you get. And probably not going to be that efficient for Jimmy Butler if Marcus Smart gets back and is healthy and capable.
One of the things that some people don't understand about losing two guys, like, well, we still got five really good players. You know, we got Tatum, we got Brown, we got this guy, we got this guy. Yeah, but your rotation changes completely. Now you're going one guy deeper on the bench that you normally don't play in the post. You're going one. I mean, Nesmith was playing guard and playing minutes, and he isn't a great player. I mean, he let me back up. He's a great player. It's just that he's not a great player in the NBA. If you're on an NBA roster, you're a great player. I mean, I'm blown away. Like, I'm watching the Mavericks and the Suns the other day, and the Mavericks are up by 46. And then the Mavericks bring in guys that you haven't heard of because they're not the star players. And I remember some names. Like, oh, I remember he played at college, and this guy, I didn't know he's in the league. And all they're doing is making threes left and right, and they're making steals. And it's like, I told my son right when we're watching that, I go, those guys are great players, and people think this is scrub time, that they're no good just because they don't start or don't play in the top seven rotation. No. Do the math here. They're one of 360 best players in the world. That's a small percentage of the people that live on this earth.
This is still the league that's the best in the world, right? Yes. So that means if you made that fraternity, you are the
best
in the world. Like, you're part of that group.
No doubt. And it is interesting. And when people say, well, this KU player didn't stick, or this K-State player didn't stick in the NBA, that means they're just not very good or a bust. No, they're like you and me sitting on our couch, all right? Except they're way better than us, but they couldn't crack the 0.001% club. I mean, that's what it – I mean, you do the math of how many people live in this country and how many players are actually in the NBA – roughly 360, if you want to add, you know, three players, sometimes 15-man rosters, okay, call it 450, whatever. Divide that into 330 million Americans. You know what the percentage is? It's not very much.
No.
Simple math. And yet those guys get like, oh, those guys are horrible. Whoa. Oh, God, we got to go to this guy. What I am saying, though, is that when you go from a Marcus Smart to Al Horford to a Daniel Tice and a Nesmith, there is a drop-off.
Yeah.
You know why? Because there's a reason why those guys aren't in the rotation to start with. Now they're forced into it, and maybe they come through with flying colors. We've seen teams have injuries. The Bucks had it when Middleton, Grayson Allen came through. But usually it's not a long-term solution. It's a short-term thing. Same thing with quarterbacks. Well, if he's so good and you want him to start, fans of NFL teams, why hasn't he beat out the starter? Well, he's just, you know, he's just not given a fair chance. Oh, I think he probably has been. I'm sure they've seen him throw the ball a lot in practice. Maybe he doesn't study the playbook good enough. Maybe he doesn't listen to the coaches. And then all of a sudden, when the starting quarterback stinks, who's the favorite player on the team? The backup quarterback. You know how often the backup quarterback actually saves the day? It's very rare.
Yeah.
Kurt Warner is a gigantic, and Jeff Hostetler are gigantic exceptions. Nick Foles, a gigantic exceptions to that rule. Chad Henne did it for a very short time with a few plays in a playoff game. Do you really think the Chiefs would have beat the Browns with Chad Henne at quarterback the entire game?
No.
No, of course not. That's why he's a backup, for crying out loud. All right, NBA playoffs continue tonight. It is the Western Conference Finals, the Warriors and the Mavericks. Game one in San Francisco, 8 o'clock on TNT. First time since 2011, I believe it is, that the top two seeds in the West did not move on, at least one of them, into the Western Conference Finals. The Warriors are the 3 seed, the Mavericks are the 4 seed. Are we still? I've got the Warriors in 7. Did you guys say in the 6?
I said 6.
Did you say 6 or 7?
I said 6 at the most. I can't remember. I might have said. I was thinking 5.
So you
in my
think
mind
this can
possibly,
be a quick
but
series?
I was going to say 6 probably. I think I said 6.
So you're not respecting the Mavericks and what they did against the Suns. You feel like maybe it wasn't as big of an accomplishment for the Mavericks? Do you believe the Warriors are that much better than the Suns?
That much better.
So you think the Warriors are that much better than the Suns? Then obviously,
yeah, right now.
Okay,
yeah.
So they're way better than the Mavericks, and they're even way better than the Suns.
In for them.
Okay. All right. The Orlando Magic last night finally won something. They won the long-awaited NBA draft lottery, and they'll have the number one overall pick in the 2022 NBA draft, which is set for June 23rd. Some people think the number one pick will be Jabari Smith out of Auburn. Others think Chet Holmgren is too good to pass up, the tall, lanky, thin toothpick center from Gonzaga, who is very good defensively. And then there is Pablo Banchero, or Patrick Mahomes Jr., as some of us know him as. Junior, okay, because Patrick Mahomes Jr. is actually the quarterback of the Chiefs, and then there's Junior. Oklahoma City Thunder will get the number 2 pick and the next 28 picks after that. I'm joking and exaggerating just slightly. The Thunder have the 2nd pick, the Rockets the 3rd pick, the Kings the 4th, and the Pistons the 5. I think Pablo Banchero is the best player. And now I haven't seen Jabari Smith play as much as Pablo Banchero, but I think Pablo Banchero is got a game that's built for the NBA. He can post. He reminds me of Jason Tatum, except maybe not quite as athletic. Maybe not quite, but close. He is a good shooter that's only going to get better from the perimeter. He can back you down. He'll post you up. He's not afraid to do that. He doesn't just live by the three like most players do nowadays. He can defend. He's got post moves. He is a nightmare in the post. I was one of the reasons why I was worried if KU played Duke. I was worried about him. And I know there have been Duke guys that have gone top five before that have been bust. You know, Marvin Bagley Jr. has been, honestly, and this is probably unfair to Marvin Bagley Jr. He's still in the league, but based on where he was drafted, he has been a disappointment. I shouldn't say bust. He's made tons of money. He can laugh at Wade, Dusty, and Jason and go, yeah, well, you think I'm a bust. What are you guys? So he has not lived up to the hype. Zion Williamson has been hurt, and there were concerns about that when he came in the NBA, and he has the potential to be unbelievable. We know that when he's healthy. The problem is he's not. So maybe some people think it's a Duke thing that, yeah, you know, Duke guys are kind of overrated. I mean, kind of like people probably feel about KU guys. Or they're highly rated, or they win the player of the year, they win the Big 12 player of the year, they go to the NBA, they don't really pan out per se, except for Joel Embiid and right now Andrew Wiggins. Devontae Graham's on a roster, now doesn't start, comes off the bench. Frank Mason's bounced around, G League now. And now KU hopes Christian Brown and Jalen Wilson will. Wilson had a good showing the other day, by the way, invited to another combine. All the people at KU fans talking about Jalen Wilson has no chance to make the NBA team or be drafted. Right now, he's moving up boards, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. All it takes is one team to think he's a guy that fits a role for their team. That's all it takes. If you think Jalen Wilson's going to be a superstar in the NBA, more than likely he's not going to be. Neither will Christian Brown, but Pablo Banchero can be. And I think he's the best pick in this draft. And the Thunder are sitting at two, and the Magic have a very tough decision to make because all three of those players are very, very good. They bring different things to the table. Jabari Smith is, I think, more raw and might have more upside. Chet Holmgren, he needs to hit the weight room and put on some muscle. He's going to get pushed all over the place in the NBA. But he's so tall. He is athletic. He can run the floor. He can rebound. He can change games. He can with shot blocking. But the game is not built for centers. So I don't think Chet Holmgren is the right pick at number one. But if I'm the Thunder, I'm sitting here going, please, please don't take Pablo at number one if you're the Magic. I'm Oklahoma City Thunder fan, and it's not like I'm a diehard fan because, you know, they haven't always been an OKC. But I go to a game usually every year except for during the COVID pandemic. And for the Thunder to take the next step and build with all their draft picks and build around the little bit of a base that they have now, which they got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's a very good player, and they got a couple of the guys that maybe have some potential. They've got to hit on one of these top picks. I think about Pablo Banchero would be the perfect fit for OKC. I could be dead wrong, and 5 years from now, you're all playing back the tape going, what an idiot Gerstner was. Pablo Banchero didn't amount to nothing. But I just look at him, and I go, this is a guy that is not a one-trick pony. There are a lot of guys that get drafted that are one-trick ponies. They either don't play both sides, they're a one-way player, they're just a three-point shooter, perhaps they're a high-volume shooter. Perhaps they're not a good foul shooter. Perhaps they're not a good rebounder, not a good defender, whatever the case may be. Maybe not a good leader. Maybe not coming from a winning program, and that's a bad thing. I like Pablo Banchero. I think he's the best player in this draft, and I think the Thunder would be lucky as heck to have him at number two.
Yeah, I can't argue that a lot, whether I think somebody else is better, because I don't right now. I haven't looked at it real close, right, and don't pay attention as much as I used to probably about some of those things. But I'd take Pablo on my team right now. Just what you said with everything that he can do. Yeah. And everybody talks about whether it's Duke players or KU players or whoever it is that goes to the pros, they don't pan out. You realize how many elite players play at all these universities. Right. They're not all going to hit.
No, they're not.
Your comparison from Duke is doing just fine in the league right now, Jason Tatum, right?
Right.
He's doing great, right? And I know Kyrie Irving didn't play a lot of games at Duke, but he's technically from Duke, and he has gone into the NBA and had a really great career. He's been his own worst enemy at times during his career as far as what he's decided to do and trying to take over. But we understand that Kyrie is one of the top players in the game when he's focused and at the right spot. That's a Duke guy.
Right.
You know, and so there's so many elite athletes. You can't – can you name a college that's had 75% of their guys hit?
No.
No. When you have that many of them.
I think now, people think Kentucky like two, has. I think
like Davidson, think you can maybe has. Name a college that had guys hit, but they don't have a lot
don't
of them.
Don't have
right?
hardly
you know,
any.
Steph's
yeah.
the guy, right? And so, but when you're like Kentucky, North Carolina, Duke, all these teams, you know, Carolina's probably one of the best ones, I guess, probably of having people hit. But it's just like, I don't think it matters where the kid goes to college when they go to the NBA. It matters what system they got into, how they're developed, and what skill set they bring to the table. Zion Williamson was that one that I never bought that was mm-hmm. going to bring in a skill set like mm-hmm. Pablo is, mm-hmm. right?
Right?
Like Jason Tatum does. He,
right.
He's you talk about one-trick pony, right? Zion doesn't do a lot of stuff, right? He's a freak of nature athletically and can dunk better than a lot of people,
he
right?
He can post and be a mini Shaq, yeah. and he can hit the outside shot at times.
Yeah, yes. but he's not consistent at that.
Obviously, yeah.
And he's hard healthy. To get consistent at if you're right. not healthy. But I never bought into him being that full NBA-type player
didn't
that was going to be a star in this yeah. league. Now, if he stayed healthy and maybe got a little more lean with mm-hmm. with the muscle that he's got and kind of chisel that out a little
yeah,
bit.
He needs to lose some weight.
He's too big for me to believe that he was going to be something like that, right? But Jason Tatum obviously is a guy that's worked hard at it from Duke, and I think Pablo is a guy that'll go out there and work hard and do what he needs to do, and I would like him on my team. I he'd be at the top of my board right now without a lot of research on what's going on. Listen, with some of those other players that are in the draft.
If you're a great player, no matter where you play, you will be found. And you will play. It doesn't matter. I mean, everybody talks about, well, I got to go to KU to get, or I got to go to Duke to get. Okay, yeah, yes, and the NIL now, yeah, that there's no doubt. That's going to help you make money before you go pro. If you're not good enough to go pro, well, at least you made some money. But if you're really, really, really good, you will be found. I'll give you one super example. Damian Lillard. Weber State. Ja Morant. Murray State. Okay, Ja Morant might be the most electrifying player in the NBA right now. Murray State.
Yeah.
He was found, wasn't he? I mean, somehow he was found.
And the Splash Brothers are Davidson and Washington State.
Yes.
Like, these people didn't go to – and I know Klay Thompson has genes that,
sure.
that help him, that he had a dad in the NBA. But, I mean, he didn't go to
this
one of Kuminga
those kid,
places.
This Kuminga kid who's got all the ability in the world, who's 19, the most athletic player on the Warriors team, according to many people. One of the most athletic guys in the league. He's 19. Never went to college.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just picked up the game like, I think, 5 or 6 years ago. And he's been discovered and found. If you are a elite player, you will be found. There are so many ways now with social media to get your stuff out there on top of it. So you don't have to play at KU or Duke to be discovered. Will it hurt your draft status? I don't know about that either, because if you go to these combines, you get to prove it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's as big a deal as it once was. But with NIL now, yes, I think it is why, you know, we got guys from Iowa State thinking about transferring to KU after mm-hmm. 1 year. That all makes sense. But, I mean, if you're really good, you will be found. I mean, Tariq Wharton for the Chiefs, I mean, he was at a Division III school. And he's in the NFL. How did that happen? He was found.
Yeah.
And he's proved it. And he was given the opportunity. Now, there might be situations where guys that are good enough to be on an NFL roster, but not stars. Guys are good enough to be on an NBA roster, but not stars. Maybe they're not given the opportunity as much as others, perhaps, because you don't know their name or where they went to school at. Perhaps. But when it comes to the best of the best, if you're one of the best, you will be found.
You're found, and then you have to get the opportunity, right?
Yeah,
and,
well,
and
if you're found, you'll have the
yeah.
opportunity.
And, you know, it's like you talked about Kurt Warner a little bit ago, right?
Yeah.
Like, you got to get the opportunity, and when you get that opportunity...
Tom Brady was a sixth-round
yeah.
pick, 199th pick in the draft,
exactly.
And when he had opportunity, he took full advantage of it.
Yeah.
He was found. He wasn't a great college quarterback. And not granted, he was at Michigan. I get all that.
Yeah.
But there's so many examples you can look at where you're like, where did this guy come from?
Well, nowhere you know, but he's here now and
right.
taking advantage of the opportunity.
He's an amazing, yeah. amazing player. I mean, Priest Holmes was undrafted. He ended up being a pretty good
mm-hmm.
NFL player, right? And granted, he played at Texas, so he at least was known. But
yeah, and had a good career at Texas.
He did.
I mean, yeah.
But still got undrafted.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But then the draft didn't matter. He proved himself.
Yeah.
And he was one of my favorite Chiefs players of all time. All right, turn to hockey, where the Avs win.
Kadri had the follow-up. Bennington fell over. Here's Manson. Bennington's reset. Manson scores! Josh Manson wins game one.
And the Avs do win with that goal, 3-2, sudden death victory in overtime. Say it with me again. Sudden death victory. Huh. No tie. That is amazing. Avalanche and the Blues, game one. Avs up now 1-0 in that Western Conference series. And also last night, you just can't kill them. The two-time defending Stanley Cup champion and Jason's favorite hockey team, the Tampa Bay Lightning, opened the second round. Jason's like, I had a favorite hockey team? Yeah. I did not know that. With a 4-1 win, I have the Kraken, you have the Lightning.
Okay.
Someday they'll meet in the Stanley Cup Finals. Don't even know if they're in the same conference or not. So they're not. If it's possible.
They can meet in the Stanley Cup Finals.
I'm being facetious. I actually did know that. I want to play on how I don't know my hockey. Tampa Bay Lightning, they went 4-1 over the top-seeded Panthers in the East. They're up 1-0. I mean, that's a situation where they got guys been there, done that. Now, granted, they don't have the same team that won it all last 2 years. They broke it up a little bit. They still got pieces on that team that have been there, done that. So you can sit here and go, well, ooh, what a big upset that could be. The top-seeded Panthers might go down. Yeah, to the two-time defending champion that knows and has had that experience. The Panthers hadn't won a series in like how many years until they finally won the first round series. I was thinking going this series, I'd take the Lightning, and they looked pretty dominant last night in a 4-1 win. Other two second round series to begin tonight. Hurricanes host the Rangers game one at 6, and the Flames host the Oilers. Not the Houston Oilers, they no longer exist, but the Edmonton Oilers, 8:30 in the West. And as everybody knows, Edmonton is somewhere between Seattle and Siberia. It's Canada, actually. I looked it up. Both games are on ESPN. It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. K-State baseball team on the season 27-24, 8-13 in conference play, but they will be in the Big 12 championship tournament coming up here later this month. And since we last spoke, they ended up taking 2 out of 3 against Baylor in the conference play, then lost a non-conference game at Virginia Tech, who's ranked 3rd in the country, 8-2. They have a 3-game set on the road at Morgantown against West Virginia tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday, and then the Big 12 Baseball Championships in Arlington at Globe Life Field, home of the Rangers. That will be coming up at Globe Life Field, that's the old one, isn't it?
No, that's the new one.
Yeah, the ballpark in Arlington is the old one. Yeah, I got that crisscross. So that'll be, apparently the Rangers are not playing there during that time.
Guess not.
Some people could argue they haven't really played much this year there, except when they beat the Royals. That's coming up next Wednesday, May 25th, is when the Big 12 Baseball Championships begin. You know, I've seen things on social media back and forth here and there about, hey, K-State's got these guys coming in for a visit. Jerome Tang is welcoming in these guys. But have they actually signed any more guys the last 5-6 days?
No, I don't believe so. Yeah. They've had visits, but no.
Antoine Davis is the guy they really wanted. He came in. He was a transfer from Detroit Mercy. And then Jeff Goodman, of course, acted like he knew all the things and where he was going to go. And he decided to pull a fast one on everyone. And I think it's hilarious. And he decided, hey, surprise, I'm going to stay where I'm at. I've got some NIL opportunities here, even in Detroit, so I'm going to stay where I'm at. So he visited K-State and all these other universities, Maryland and others, and everybody's like, oh, he's got it down to these two choices. And it was neither one of them.
Yeah.
So much for the sources that Jeff Goodman had. And if you play this business long enough, you're going to get it wrong on your sources.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Or you're guessing and you're throwing a dart and you claim that they're your sources, and your sources are your left brain and your right brain, your cerebral cortex or whatever it's called. I fell asleep in class in biology or anatomy or whatever that class was called. Something like that. That was your favorite class, wasn't it, Jason?
No, they're all... All the science ones were my favorites.
Yeah? Yeah. He rolls his eyes. What was your favorite class? Recess?
Yes.
Lunch for me.
Yeah.
It wasn't a class, but PE. I always like PE, except I hid the horrible small shorts that we had to wear.
Strangely
liked. You talk about things that people shouldn't see.
Okay. Strangely liked math until it turned into letters.
Thank you. That's how I feel as well. Yeah. I love math until somehow they decided to insert the alphabet into the numerical system, and I completely didn't get it. And then they went one step further and created geometry. And Jay Rao, if you're listening, I'm not going to go any further with that. Jay tells me that at some point in my life, I've probably used geometry. I ask him, could you give me possibly an example? And he has not been able to do that. So thus, I don't know if he's right or wrong on that. He could be right. He could be wrong. All I know is I don't believe I've actually used it. I'm just
saying. Here's the thing. I could be wrong.
So, I don't recall it.
Geometry deals with angles a lot and stuff like that.
I'm trying to think of when I use my angles.
Like, we've used geometry, but we're not applying the principles that we learned in a geometry class to use that. We're just guessing.
When I say that it's 380...
I didn't even take geometry, so...
Well, you're lucky. How did you not take geometry? I think it was required. I had to take it.
We had to have two math classes, right?
I was required to
take it. Now, if you probably, for a four-year school, had to have more than two math classes.
I had to take it.
I went to community college and took the necessary math to graduate high school.
And you're better for it.
And just called it
good.
You're
better for it. Well, and odds are you've used geometry even though you never took the class, and I did. So what was the point of me taking it if you're already applying geometry and you don't know it?
I've dealt with angles and used geometry and things like that probably, but I have no idea if I'm applying it the way anybody would learn it because I never took geometry.
I could be wrong here, but the baseball bounces in the right field corner and hits one wall and another wall in front of the 383 sign. I'm still not calling that geometry. I'm simply calling the ball bounced off the wall. Couldn't that also be called physics?
I feel we hire people that use geometry more, like the carpenters with the
There's no doubt. Architects, carpenters, you need geometry.
We hire those people that use geometry more than I use it.
I am not saying that geometry isn't useful.
Right.
I'm just saying, for all three of us, I don't think we really needed it in the radio industry. I could be wrong. And if there is something that's geometry related, it probably is all over the place in stuff that we use in regards to making the board and the meters and the buttons. But the thing is, I didn't have to put that together. I simply had to put in an order, and it arrived from Beijing or wherever the place it came from, you know, Taiwan. I don't know where it came from. Hopefully America. But that doesn't mean I use the geometry. That's kind of an interesting thing. So, yeah, I've had lots of conversations about geometry. But the favorite class thing, my kids have always said basically lunch, recess, PE. That I was like, yeah, totally. Yeah. I always say math until exactly what you said. And I think Dusty's the same way.
Yep, math.
No, I didn't. I never.
Not a lot of us say English. Do you understand?
I actually, that was my favorite class because we wrote in English.
Oh, it was your favorite
English
class?
English and journalism was my favorite class.
See, I like journalism, and I didn't mind.
Now,
English. I didn't
mind.
Not
counting like Woods and stuff like that. I'm just like talking regular classes. Like I loved Woods' class because he could build stuff and make things. But as far as a general normal class that everybody might take,
used geometry in Woods' class.
English.
He probably did.
Yeah,
see,
probably.
I was in Woods' class.
I just
it went well. Until Mr. Mueller cut one of his fingers off. I'm not joking. He lost part of a finger, as did every Woods teacher.
That's just
you're not a woodwork. You're not a true woodworks teacher. Sorry, Jason Channel. You're not a true woodworks teacher until you've lost a digit. Somebody told me once. Like, you're not doing it right. You're not actually helping people do anything because you haven't put yourself in enough situations to lose a digit with a saw. And I'm like, dude, that is so morbid and so gross and so bad. And I don't want to make light of people having horrible accidents. Trust me, I don't. But that is a running joke in the profession. It has been since I was in Woods classes. If you are a woodworks teacher, hold up your hands and we'll know immediately if you were or you weren't. Which worried me. What was funny was when I heard that, I'm like, so do I want that guy teaching me how to do woods? Because does that mean I'm going to lose a part of my pinky finger? I don't let that cross my mind.
I remember
doing a woods project and I was routing. What's that?
If you wanted an A.
If you wanted an A, I remember one time I was in a woods project and I was making some kind of shelf. I made this big bookcase and I mismeasured, by the way. So then we had to take parts of the house and the stairwell out so we could get it up to my room because I didn't apparently didn't believe his geometry. That's when it would have helped me. Sorry, Jay, I finally found my example of how it could help me, but I hadn't actually. I don't think I'd taken geometry yet at that point. So see, there it is. When I really needed it, it wasn't there for me. But I remember routing something. I think it was a shelf. I was routing, and it really, and all of a sudden the router just dropped. And I just kept going.
It'll go everywhere.
I just kept going. I'm like, I guess that's what it's supposed to do. And then my teacher comes over, my WITS teacher, he's coming over like, what did you do? I'm like, I didn't do it. The router did it. I mean, you're the teacher. You explain to me how it went all wrong. And he's probably like, you idiot. Once it starts making black marks on your wood, you might want to stop. I'm like, nah, I'm going to power through this sucker. But I got all my digits.
Yeah.
Good times.
I took two WITS classes my senior year, so that's obviously
two
was
your senior year.
Took my
what were they called?
And then the regular one was called just industrial ed three.
Okay,
because you couldn't take it as a freshman, and the other one was independent study because I just you could take them, and I built a lot of stuff my senior year. I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
I'd planned it because I was going to build a chest of drawers, and I planned to be done with that maybe by semester. And I think I was done like shortly after the first 9 weeks. I'm like, I'll better figure out some other things to make. I was just making shelves for other people. And just
one of the things I didn't like about WITS was that you only had so many minutes in class, and so by the time you pulled everything out and then put stuff away, you didn't get a lot accomplished.
Goggles on and get ready and set it up and
And then I was like, dude, can I just skip my next, like, can I skip algebra and geometry and work on this, you know, a little bit longer? And my oldest son, he's been in WITS class the first couple of years in high school, and he's made some really cool things. He made a nightstand for my wife, and he made a nice it's trying to explain what it really is. But anyway, we used it to replace the ottoman that was all worn out downstairs in the basement. And he made a really nice, cool sign with the family name on it and engraved and everything. And granted, he's got some great instruction and teachers helping him with that. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, that's cool. I always have been jealous of people that are able to make things from scratch, because when I try to do it, it involves a lot of duct tape and odd labeled screws and bad angles. And once again, God, Wade, geometry could have helped you there too. I took the class and it still didn't help me when I tried to put these things together. But I've always been a little bit jealous of people that can create things from the standpoint of whether it's a WITS project, whether it's building something. I did welding at one point. I could weld things together, but could I have a concept of actually building something by welding? Just like, hey, here's two pieces of iron. I can weld that together. Yeah, well, what's your concept? Hell if I know. I'm just welding. Okay, I think it's cool. The helmet. I see fire. I melt iron into iron, and I make a T. Wow! Yay! Congrats! You know, I've always also been very jealous of. And this is probably even worse. I am very, maybe jealous is the wrong word, envious. I really wish that I was a terrific artist. I mean, I really wish I could draw. Like, I can't draw a stick figure that's worth a dang. I see people that draw freehand and some of the things that people come up with. And I actually liked drawing. We had, I think in junior high, Mrs. Dirks, we had a class and we had these like 3D type of things and different, and you know, some of it was kind of traced out and it was cool to kind of see it come to life, but I was cheating. I had a template to do it. I didn't create it from scratch.
Yeah.
And I thought, man, I wish I had that creative bone in my body where I could do that type of thing. And I simply don't. And so when I see people, you know, puts things together that whether it's a WITS project or, you know, or guys that build things from scratch, whether they actually, you know, restore a car on their own, you know, and make alterations to their vehicle. I'm like, I'm envious of how creative and how good people are with their hands when it comes to all that stuff, because I'm just not.
Yeah.
I push buttons. And if they're not lit up correctly, that's the only way I know if they work or not. Our focus on K-State Athletics and WITS projects, brought to you in part by Heineck Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. Enjoy the rest of your day. Regional track reports tomorrow and Friday. Jason's now going to go double-check what his class schedule was to see which class really was his favorite. And Dusty and I will look up and see at what point did we use geometry. And I will check with Mr. Moeller to see if he's lost any more digits. You have a great day, everyone, and enjoy all the regional baseball and softball and high school athletics as it winds down this week and into next.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.